Hello and welcome to the Wild Wormhole, where much like the card, you never know what you're gonna get. I'm D-House here with Jim J. Bray. How you doing, Jim?
What is going on? Why are we doing two podcasts in the same set? What are we, crazy?
Yeah, for some reasons, we are gluttons for punishment, and we are here recording yet again. Right from the get-go, I'm just going to say this. At some point, my three-year-old is going to come in the room and is going to interrupt us because it's very wormhole style, is keep you on your toes. You don't know what's going to happen.
That'll be so fun. Cannot wait. I already have some ideas for my monologue time for that. So it's going to be great.
Yeah. He used to be a great sleeper. He's supposed to be in bed, but he's in this phase where he likes to come out of his room a lot and just check in on me, and it's exhausting, but I love him. And so we're just gonna roll with it, and this is dad life keyboard style, so yeah, it's gonna be
so
great.
Good.
It's gonna be good. So Jim, let's get in it. Let's talk about your Keyforge endeavors recently. What have you been up to with Keyforge?
A lot of casual play. So we finished our ABR league, which we'll get to in a little bit later. But yeah, that's been about it for the competitive side of things. From there, just testing a lot of the Dark Tidings deck that I've opened up and never played, just to kind of see just like what type of combos they have or how viable are they against different sets, things like that. But yeah, it's been much more casual, I think. Definitely different from your experience, if you want to dig into that a little bit.
Well, you said we were going to get an ABR later, but that's pretty much your only update, so why don't you talk about it?
Sounds good. Okay, so we did finish our ABR league, which again was that team Keyforge tournament where we were on a team of 10 Archons, and we fought against all the other teams. We did our best. Unfortunately, we finished 9th out of the 10 teams that were there. So I know, we barely missed the playoffs. It was so much fun though. Again, the camaraderie that went along with the event and all of the different like play styles was really fun to kind of just think about Keyforge in many different ways, as well as just like really get to know some of the community that's out there, which is really cool. But alas, our ABR endeavors are finished for this season.
Yeah, super sad about that, but as I mentioned, it was some of the most fun I've had playing Keyforge since it's been out. I think getting paired with, well, instead of 9 strangers, it was 8 strangers because you were in there somehow. But it was fun being with Dave Cordero on his team, and all the times we've had to play against him to finally be paired up. That's the first interruption number one from the 3-year-old. It was so much fun. It was really great. Really enjoyed all the different times, except for the fact that it was 7 weeks, right? And I started off 3-0 in the first 3 weeks, and then finished 0-4, so finished 3-4 overall for our team, which was a major bummer.
I did the exact same. So I started 0-2 and then won a couple matches, lost one, and then finished strong. So I also finished 3-4 on the league.
So for those who don't know, every week in ABR is a different format, like completely different, some wild stuff. What, Jim, what was your favorite? What was your least favorite?
Oh, man. I'm trying to remember all of them.
Put you on the spot.
Sure. So least favorite was probably the Dark Tidings Sealed, because we went through all the decks. Essentially, we were given a large pool of decks. I think it was 20 total. And we each got to pick one. So 10 of them were used, 10 were not used. And the one that was my favorite, I was really excited about. I wasn't allowed to play it because another player on our team named D-House wanted it instead. And so he got to play the deck. But I did get a win that week. But I definitely was watching your match very closely. Like, if this scrub doesn't win his match on my deck, it's not my deck. It's a sealed deck. But I took ownership. That was definitely the toughest one. I think my favorite was the flip side. It was actually Dark Tidings Archon. I pulled a really fun deck kind of the first day that Dark Tidings came out. And it was also really enjoyable just to get to run that one against the best of the best as far as how the early viewpoints go as far as like what would be the best out there. So it was a pretty fun week. Had a crazy match with no creature control against a big Sanctum board and somehow pulled out a win. So that one is probably my favorite.
Yeah, that's so funny because my favorite format was the Dark Tidings Sealed.
I bet it was.
And when you join the league, you have to put in like your preferred formats and Sealed. I love Sealed. Like I, to me, that's like peak Keyforge, where you open a deck and you have 5 minutes to figure out what the heck is the deck doing, and then you play. Like I love it. One animal cracker. Nope. Go to bed. Sorry. This is again parenting a 3-year-old. So anyway, so Sealed was my favorite. Honestly, the deck was sick. I got to pull off 2 Ruins of Arcanus in the first 3 turns or whatever it is, and 1 by turn 5. So that was pretty nasty. Least favorite week was the Chain Net deck week.
Interesting.
I did not enjoy it. I don't like, even though it's kind of like Sealed, I don't like picking some random person's deck from around the world and getting chains to play it against all the best decks. Like, to me, that just, I'm like, I feel like we're just playing to our, like, who gets their major combo off first, and then, and it's not that, I'm simplifying it. I know there's more depth to it than that, but I just did not like that, and I also got crushed. But I also just didn't like the process of choosing a deck. I think I let someone else choose a deck for me, because I'm like, this isn't fun for me, so, but, yeah, it was still super fun. Really enjoyed it. And
I'll say you've been involved in some other leagues as well. If you wanted to jump in, at least give some shout outs and give some updates on how all those went.
Yes, 100%. There's a kind of lesser known league that's sort of newer called Casual Loop, has been super fun. And I've been playing in each league that they've done. It's pretty much just 4-week leagues. And it's Archon, but it's a 75 SAS cap, and the person who wins the league, that deck gets banned from all future Casual Loop leagues and tournaments. I think there's like monthly tournaments. Tournaments are so much harder for me in this stage of life, but so anyway, so I've been playing that, but also everybody gets to vote on banning 3 cards from the winning deck for all future decks. So even though, so it's like, oh, I don't know, Infernus got banned at some point. So in future leagues, we won't see Infernus or Quixel Stone. And there's like a bunch of these cards that have been banned. So every time a new league starts, you have to get a little bit more creative looking through your decks under 75 SAS that don't have any banned cards.
Sweet. That's interesting. I like too the ban mechanic, just to try to get really creative with how to think competitively about Keyforge if certain cards just weren't in the meta. Because there's so many cards that it's like, you can never play Fertility Chant because Infernus is a card that's out there. But the moment that card's not in the pool anymore, you can play it again. That's really interesting as far as how that new idea has really shifted just like how you think about like a tournament meta, if there is one in Keyforge.
Yep. Yeah, so in the last one, I went 3-1 with one of my new Dark Tidings decks, the Herbalist of Dumbmouth. It's triple Doorstep to Heaven thing. That's super fun. Next one's starting again soon, so I'm trying to figure out what deck I want to run. I might go with an old favorite from Worlds Collide, the early Nightbridge of Graveyard, my quadruple Harmonia deck. I noticed I am drawn to decks that have like 3 or 4 copies of cards. Like for some reason, I don't know, maybe it's my old middle school Pokemon brain that loves that stuff. I don't know. But super fun. So so I'm doing that. Then I just started a league with Average Joes, and it's a SAS dive league. So the first week you had to play a deck that's 68 SAS or lower, and then And then in week two, it goes down to 66. Week three, 64. And it just goes down by two every week. So I decided to start week one with a deck I opened literally like 12 hours before my first game with a double Archon's Callback efficiency nonsense crazy Dark Tidings thing. And did not win. It's a weird deck. I'll probably still mess with it because it seems really fun, but lost the first one. So getting ready for, I got to figure out my deck for 66 Sass and below, which I think Dark Tidings around that number is actually pretty strong. So I'm interested to see, maybe what I have in there. We'll see. And then finally, this past Wednesday, I hopped on the Archon's Corner Discord. There's a little tab called Wednesdays with Lotkar, and Pink Bunny Games runs like a sealed chainbound every Wednesday. And I finally was able to join it because it's at a good time and I'm on vacation. So hopped in there and got a Dark Tidings sealed deck and that I loved. Q Never Sold the Cavern Mathematician. And you know how much I love math, Jim.
Big math guy, absolutely.
So it's a Sanctum Saurian Star Alliance, and the Star Alliance is super fun. It's got the Comm Officer Gross and Hings, and then also has the Z-Force agent, which I've never had a Z-Force agent deck. Out of all the, I don't know how, but I just never had it. Double Strange Ordination. Nothing too crazy in Saurian, but it did have the Larry of the Lake, Yuri in the Circumspect, and Seraphic Armor. Crazy stuff. So I actually got several huge reaps with Yuri in the Circumspect, and it's super fun. It, for Dark Tidings, it has 18 printed Amber Pips, which is super high for Dark Tidings, and has a 28 expected Amber, but it's only 3 on the Amber control. So basically, you have to rush in order to win, but it was super fun. Made it to the finals, lost in the finals. I actually recorded the games, and they're up on our YouTube channel if you want to check them out, to see my side of the games. I just love sealed. I had so much fun. Hopefully I can do it again on some Wednesdays in the future, but yeah, it was good.
Sweet. So David, you're doing a great job with, you know, staying active in the community, playing all these tournaments, and I'm just being a bum is what I'm hearing.
Yeah,
it's okay.
KeyForge community, please call Jim the J-Bray out somewhere online and shame him. He plays more casual games than I know of any human being, but doesn't join any of these leagues except for ABR when I, like, force him to. So I keep telling you, man, like, these leagues are like one game a week. It's not twisting your arm. You got to join some. You got to try them out.
It's true. It's true. And I always enjoy them. I really do. Every time I decided, like, all right, fine, you twist my arm, it's like, oh, that was great. Why don't I always do that? And then it's just on to the next one where it kind of recycles the same format. So we'll get there. I'll be active and competitive. And in the meantime, find me on casual games. I like to play there quite a bit. So
I mean, I like casual games too, but I think my competitive nature, like, I am just, if I can play for the gold, like, I want to play for the gold for the most part. I, like I said, the highest competitive levels, like, I don't have time to, like, invest in that. But I love these, like, SAS cap events to play those middling, like, weird decks. I think that's where, in, like, sealed events, I think that's where I have a lot of fun. So, but anyways, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think those really do speak to the heart of, like, the intentions of KeyForge when it was first created, as far as you take your random deck, I take my random deck, we try our best to make this thing work, more so than let me just find the deck that has the most combos together or the most, like, cohesive ideas. So yeah, I dig that quite a bit with those type of leagues, where it's a lot more, I guess, true to what KeyForge was intended to be.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so Jim, we can move on to the next one, but I need to step out for 2 minutes to help my son, as I mentioned, with something. So if you want to introduce our next segment, and I'll hop back on in the next 2 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, sure thing. So one idea that we've kind of had with, like, our podcast, David and I both get just, like, really excited about, like, individual decks. And so he and I will just sit and talk for, you know, hours, days sometimes about like just how cool like some of the combos are that we found, just different things that this deck can do. And then we'll also like each run our own games to see like how it works, what are like our own personal strategies for it. And so one of our ideas for just kind of a in-between podcast, just to kind of check back into the community, give some shout outs as far as like what we're up to, is yeah, just kind of go through some of those decks that get us really excited. So this is going to be our inaugural just deck review podcast. So the way this is going to look, it's going to be pretty kind of straightforward. It's not going to be like the most in-depth thing where we're going to, you know, crunch a bunch of numbers about, you know, all of its stats and everything like that. It's just more so of why do we love this thing? And so we're going to, you know, go over the deck, talk about, you know, all the houses, different cards in there. And then we kind of just want to like highlight some of the ways that it can pull off like really fun wins and how we typically like to play it. And then two, just yeah, as two guys who love Keyforge deeply, we just wanted to kind of share some stories of some of our favorite games and maybe some ways that this deck has just pulled off some just hilarious upsets or come from behind victories. And I think with this one in particular, it definitely has that opportunity. So yeah, that was just kind of a quick rundown of kind of what we're going to be up to. So I'm not sure. David, are you back yet? He is not. That's okay. So I'll go ahead and introduce the deck. So for this week's deck review, we're going to go with our all-time favorite deck, and it's called Wherever Femur, Bayou Overlord. So if you've ever been on a Discord chat with us or in a group, you've probably heard us talk about this deck in some capacity or at least like mention it before. It is easily the Wild Wormhole's favorite deck. So yeah, like I said, we're going to take some time to kind of just go through each of the houses, really kind of do like a deep dive into, yeah, just kind of what this deck brings to the table, kind of some more stories behind it. So yeah, that's kind of the idea there. So I guess first I can just start with how do we even come across this thing? Because it was a little bit more of a story than your typical, like just bought a random deck or bought it off of a friend. So actually our good friend Landon, who he actually got me into Keyforge, and he's, you know, right when Coda first came out, he was one of the guys really like leading the charge for this game, which is really cool. So Worlds Collide came out. He took some time to get some decks and he opened up this deck, Wherever Femur. And throughout Worlds Collide, he just had some busy things come up, and this deck was just sitting there in his pile for a long time. So David and I just have hounded him for, gosh, probably weeks and weeks, maybe even months, about like, Landon, please play competitively. This deck is so cool. And he just didn't believe us, or really like, maybe just didn't like see the combos or the potential that it had that we did. But it was like the moment we saw this thing, it was just like this golden aura of like spice that we were just like, this thing is incredible. So eventually he finally just ended up just giving it to us or selling it to us as like a team deck. So yeah, that's how this one came to join our party and become a Wild Wormhole exclusive deck. So yeah, it's been played in several different tournaments that we've been a part of, and really kind of just captures the core of kind of who we are. So currently just trying to stall a little bit more for David to get back before we jump right in. I don't want to give away all the spies before he gets here, because I know he definitely wants to dig into this one with me too. But I can at least go over some of the things for you guys. So again, the deck is called Wherever Femur, Bayou Overlord. So if you're listening, you like you want to pull it up on like Dex Keyforge, feel free to go ahead and do that. Currently, today on July 11th, 2021, it's an 84 SAS deck. And I'll just go through the stats real quick because I doubt we'll go too much into in depth.
I'm back.
Hey, welcome. So yeah, it's a 84 rated deck. It's got 24 amber, 4.8 control, 19 creature control, and then a little bit of speed, a little bit of recursion. So David, welcome back. I gave the quick rundown of how we got this deck, why we just the fact that it's kind of the staple Wild Wormholian deck, but I have given no spoilers about what they should expect from here.
Okay. So, wait, did you at least say like what it's famous for?
No, I haven't revealed anything.
Okay, this is great. Okay, so yeah, this is a deck we've been approached several times by people wanting to buy it, trade for it. I mean, it is as much a collector's deck as it is a competitive deck for the most part. But it is yeah, it's one of those where like I'll be in random discords and I'll see it being talked about, like, you'll never believe this seal deck I just played with, and they'll bring up this deck and be like, oh my gosh, it just makes me so happy. To me, it's like everything Keyforge is supposed to be, because it has a Maverick in it, a Saurian Dino Key Charge.
Yes,
and not only does it have a Saurian Key Charge, but it has a Senator Brockus, which, if you're new, let me read them for you. It's a 4-power Saurian creature. It says you may spend amber on friendly creatures as if it were in your pool, and it has a fight, reap effect, exalt Senator Brockus. So Saurians in Worlds Collide love to exalt, love to capture, and Brockus makes it so you get to use that amber. This key charge makes it so you can get a bunch of amber on your creatures and then key charge on that turn with that amber, which is just absolute insanity. So this deck is sort of infamous. It's definitely the quintessential Wild Wormhole deck. It has a Wild Wormhole, by the way, but let me jump into the Saurian package first. Just to celebrate this, the greatness that is the Saurian. Okay, so it has an Ancient Power, Amber Pip, ward each friendly creature with Amber on it, which is really great when you're trying to pull off a key charge in Saurian. Imperium says play, ward two friendly creatures. Great. Love warding Brockus to protect him, right?
Absolutely.
It's got the key charge. Then it's got not one, not two, not three, but four copies of Phalanx Strike, which is, of course, choose a creature, deal one to it for each friendly creature. You may exalt a friendly creature to repeat the preceding effect. So, absolute insane board control there. And you love exalting in this deck because you get to use that amber to forge keys, which is just wonderful. Or you can Phalanx Strike and then take advantage of the Ancient Power to ward each friendly creature with amber on it, which is just so great. And just, again, more protecting Senator Brockus. You've got a Grim Locust Dux, the 11-power, 2-armored Saurian with Taunt that says play, exalt Grim Locust Dux twice, which, again, is fine if you're trying to use that amber to forge. It's got a Paragardian, 6-power, 1-armor, reap. You may exalt Paragardian if you do ward each of its neighbors. More warding. So important. Then it's got Brockus and then 2 copies of Theros Centurion, the 6-power Saurian creature with 1-armor, play, fight, capture one. Again, capture the amber, put it on Theros Centurion, and then key charge with that amber. Use your opponent's amber for your own advantage. Jim, if I'm honest, I think, like, these 12 cards in Saurian, I wouldn't change a single card.
Wow.
Not a single one.
Interesting.
Like I was thinking about it. Like, if there's something that I'm like, oh, well, this could be better, this could be more helpful. But I don't think so. I think all of them are uniquely necessary for what the deck wants to do. Wouldn't change a single card.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, too, like, as we get into kind of the other houses. So I haven't even told them what all houses there are on this. So it's a Dis logo Saurian. And so we definitely wanted to start with the Saurian sweetness there as far as the key charge, the flank strikes, all of that. I think I can agree with you because of the spice in the other two houses. So it's kind of like in a vacuum, all of these cards put together just seem like they'd be incredible as far as, you know, warding your creatures, using the flank strikes to always have an empty board on your opponent's side. And then, of course, tons of different ways to either capture amber or exalt amber so that Brockus can keep triggering over and over and over again. So it definitely feels like if you only played Keyforge with these 12 cards, it's just like the dream scenario of like these massive dinos just wreaking havoc over the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that's probably is a good hat tip to what else is coming, because as we mentioned, there the two cards, the Brockus and Key Charge, are pretty integral to the strategy of winning. And the Logos package has tons of archiving that'll make it possible. Dis has some recursion that I'll let you get into that make it super important. But man, especially after playing like Dark Tidings Saurian, where I've not really enjoyed Dark Tidings Saurian, to look at this, I'm like, oh, I forgot how beautiful it can be.
Like, you are a good house, I promise. It's yes. just not in this world.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny. So I think I wrote down Dis first to go over, but I think I actually kind of want to go over Logos first, if that's all right with you.
Go for it.
Sweet. So of course we kind of hinted at it a little bit that there is, you know, lots of ways to archive, or like, you know, get this beautiful Saurian package all wrapped up in a nice little bow. So I was just going to go through the Saurians real quick, or sorry, the Logos cards real quick. To kind of help you guys understand just like how this all works well. So it does have two copies of EDAI Eddie 4x4. Everybody just calls him Eddie, which is a 3-power AI scientist creature in Logos. And it just says play, archive a card. But then it says your opponent's keys cost +1 amber for each card in your archive. So with two copies of this, you're able to put away some of these Saurian pieces. So obviously if like you have a Key Charge or Brockus in hand, you can of course, you know, put those away to kind of protect them for the big Key Charge turn. Or even if you just have some other cards, like if you want to save a Flank Strike so you can just have some good creature control saved away. There's so many of the Saurian cards that will help you pull off this Key Charge that almost no matter what you put into the archives, it'll help you out. So I think, yeah, we can go ahead and start by saying you almost always want to archive Saurian if you can.
Yes. Yep.
So yeah, there's 7 cards with Amber Pips on them. You have the 4 Flank Strikes. And then the Ancient Power, Imperium. There's only 6. But all of those have the Amber Pips. And then, of course, Key Charge, Brockus, you want to keep away for that combo together. So the only cards that, like, you maybe aren't ecstatic about archiving are the 2 Theros Centurions, Paraguardian, and Grimlockus Dux. But even on play, 3 of those 4 cards immediately get Amber on them. So truly, every card in Saurian can get to Amber or like work towards that Key Charge goal, which is sweet. From there, we do have 2 different artifacts. So we have 1 Anomaly Exploiter and also 1 Hologramophone. So the Anomaly Exploiter just says action, destroy a damaged creature. So any of your opponent's creatures that have damage on them, you can just destroy it on a Logos turn, which is great that there's so much creature control in Saurian and also a pretty good amount in Logos. And then Hologramophone just says action, ward a creature. So you play an Eddie, you immediately get to ward it, protect it for a turn, and then your opponent's keys get to cost more for a couple extra turns typically, which is sweet. And then from there, there are 3 different cards that will do some more creature control in Logos, which I feel like is pretty rare for the house. Like, it's not usually known for its good creature control, but it has 2 copies of Entropic Swirl, which says choose a creature, for each trait that creature has, deal 2 damage to it and gain 1 amber. So earlier where I said Eddie was an AI and a scientist, that'd be 2 traits. So if I did this to Eddie, it would deal 4 damage and I would gain 2 amber for hitting that Eddie. So that one has a lot of cool triggers with just different creatures that your opponents may have. And then it also does have a copy of Twin Bolt Emission, which does 2 damage to 2 different creatures. So a pretty decent amount of creature control, even in Logos, which is surprising. And obviously there's some good combos with those 3 cards in particular, with doing some ping damage and then using Anomaly Exploiter to just go ahead and kill that off, which is pretty nice. From there, there's a Cutthroat Research, which says play, steal 2 amber if your opponent has 8 or more amber. So that gets pretty spicy with multiple Eddies or lots of cards in your archive with 1 Eddie out. Just because they're typically, you know, over that threshold of 6 amber to forge a key, but maybe they couldn't forge, and so Cutthroat Research actually does get some pretty good play. So yeah, let's see. From there, there's just 3 other creatures. So there's a Hapsis, which is a 5-power mutant scientist. It says, after an enemy creature is destroyed fighting Hapsis, ward Hapsis and draw a card. There's a Sanitation Engineer, which has Hazardous 1 and says, reap discard a card from your hand. And then there's also a Wormhole Technician, which just says, reap, reveal the top card of your deck. If it is a Logos card, play it. Otherwise, archive it. So those last three creatures are fine, I feel like, is the best way to say it. Like, Hapsis can occasionally, you know, get you some more cycle going on. Sanitation Engineer, the reap, discard a card. Sometimes you can get rid of a card you just don't need to try to cycle into that, like, really spicy turn. And then Wormhole Technician, if it does stay alive for a turn, it actually does do a pretty good job of cycling through your deck and kind of archiving away either more Saurian pieces or maybe a discard that you don't necessarily need right then and there. So that's the Logos house. So yeah, like I said, so still a lot. Oh, so sorry. I missed one more card in here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the spicy ones. People.
Yeah.
I know. It's the card that can just win you a game on the spot. I don't think there's ever been another card like this in the history of Keyforge where you just play it and you win and it's great. And that is, of course, Wild Wormhole.
Ironic that that's the one you forget.
I know. Well, I wanted to save it for last because it's like, you know, the ultimate card. And then I just, you know, was, oh yeah, here's the creatures. But oh yes, Wild Wormhole. So of course that is just, you know, Amber, play the top card of your deck. Ultimate random, we'll see what happens. So yeah, that one's super fun. It's definitely a deck where you don't always want to play Wild Wormhole. Just gonna be honest, I have definitely had a turn one play Wild Wormhole into Key Charge. So basically just play a card to not gain any Amber or do anything and lose Key Charge because now it's in the discard pile. So it can definitely be risky to play the Wild Wormhole. You definitely have to remember what's in your draw pile before you do it, just to make sure that you're just being conscious of those type of things that can happen.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty wild. Honestly, my MVP in Logos tends to be the Entropic Swirl.
I think I agree.
And with two copies of this rare, it's like, that's really solid. To do, because did you read the Entropic Swirl off? I missed it if you did.
I did, yeah.
Okay.
And even just the I talked about just like the ping damage, as well as with the Anomaly Exploiter, just since it's an artifact, it's always out there. Just that little combo that you can just, you know, occasionally get three Amber off of it and kill a decent sized creature. Or if they have a huge creature out there that's causing issues, you can just do a little ping damage and then Exploiter just kills it.
Yeah.
So it definitely has a lot more playability and it seems to take care of more creatures on the other side of the board than most people would initially assume from a card like this.
Yep. Definitely lots of good burrs. Also, I've had some plays where like Hapsis being able to like be warded a ton is helpful when you need to Fouling Strike and exalt some creatures, but you want it on like a protected guy, and so being able to throw it on Hapsis tends to be a nice easy play.
Sure.
And then obviously the Hologramophone for warding Brachus is always great. Yeah. It's pretty solid.
Yeah. It's funny because I think like on like the SAS rating, the Logos is actually the highest SAS because there's so many just like single cards by themselves. They're just good cards all around. Like obviously like Eddies are incredible.
Yeah.
Entropic Swirl, like you mentioned, is such good creature control and Amber gain. A little bit more like a little bit of Amber control. I know. So I mentioned earlier, there's only 4.8 Amber control in here. But between the two Theros Centurions, the two Eddies, and a Cutthroat Research, I mean, that's already a decent amount right then and there, especially with being able to kind of cycle through and make some bigger plays happen. So, yeah, it's a very solid logo spot for sure.
Anomaly Exploiter is, like, such an underrated card when combined with Twin Bolt Emission and some of those, like, little ping effects.
Totally.
Really, really like that. It's good. Like I said, this has a ton of creature control. So good. We ready to move into this?
I think you gave him the spice with the Key Charge and Brachus. I kind of explained a little bit about how you can let your dreams be reality with like the Eddies, the Wormhole Technicians. But I think the Dis has like the worst rap but does truly like tie this whole deck together.
Yeah.
In just the most beautiful way. So yes, I'm so ready for you to go in here and tie this all up.
So good. By the way, I'm gonna link to this deck in the show notes. So if you're listening to it and you want to follow along, you can open the show notes and click on the link and get into there. But yeah, so the dis, I mean, it really comes down to two cards in, well, like four cards, but two different types of cards. Yes. There's three Exhumes. Exhume is choose a creature, discard pile, play that creature as if it belonged to the active house and was in your hand. So the obvious targets for the triple Exhume are Eddie and the Senator Brockus. To get him back out, if he got killed or discarded or whatever, to pull him back in and to be able to do it. So the triple Exhume is absolutely clutch. The other one is Obsidian Forge. We've got a second key cheat. Which of course is artifact, destroy any number of friendly creatures. You may forge a key at +6 current cost, reduced by 1 for each creature destroyed this way. If you forge a key this way, destroy Obsidian Forge. So if you can Exhume Brockus and you've got a bunch of amber on the board, you can Obsidian Forge. There's some tricks there, but you can definitely cheat out that third key. The other actions, you've got a copy of Binding Irons, you got a copy of Festering Touch, which is another damage effect, which is great with Anomaly Exploiter. You've got Gleeful Mayhem, more great creature control, dealing 5 to each creature of each house. Or pick one. My 3-year-old is back. He just loves Keyforge, guys. And then we've got 5 disc creatures, Edirome, Harbinger of Doom, Malison, Spider, and then No Name, which is a rare creature. You might not even know what it is. No Name gets +1 power for each purged card, and it has a play, fight, reap effect, purge a card in a discard pile. It's definitely one of the weirder pieces of the disc house, that like sometimes it's nothing and sometimes it's phenomenal, because you can purge the stuff that might purge your stuff. So if you can purge their Infernus that would want to purge your Brockus or key charge, you're in much better shape.
For sure.
Yeah, it's very interesting. There's the Obsidian Forge Harbinger of Doom combo, where you can, if you've got Obsidian Forge out and you just need to board wipe real quick, you can play Harbinger, kill it, it'll wipe the board. I don't find that you do that very much with this deck, because you know, you're doing lots of exalting, lots of stuff. You don't tend to want to do board wipes. But if you get behind for some crazy reason, it's definitely a nice little like, oh crap, you know, moment that can definitely work. But definitely having the second key cheat is super nice in a deck that lacks amber control. Sometimes you're racing and it can reach these moments where, because you have so much creature control, they can't kill your creatures, which makes the Obsidian Forge a little bit easier to pull off. So any thoughts on the disc package?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it starts with Exhume. So now that we've talked about all of the cards that are in here, I think with the three Exhumes, you want the Exhumes to hit the Eddies to archive more of the Saurian. It's kind of the dream scenario. So when we're looking for, like, quick mulligans, you know, sometimes we'll get two Exhumes to start, and it's almost just like an immediate mulligan. Unless we have an Eddie in hand as well. So it's kind of, yeah, we're always looking for those Eddies first, but the disc package kind of coming in, doing the cleanup, and almost being the cog that makes the, like, Logos and Saurian just, like, really, like, gel well together is just perfect. I love, too, the Obsidian Forge, because a lot of people will forget that it's even out there. And so one of my favorite little tricky plays is, if you do have a lot of the Saurian creatures out there with amber on them, you can Exhume back Brockus, kill a couple creatures that don't have amber on them, and then use that amber to forge a key, which people just forget about, which is always hilarious. So, yeah, it just has a lot of just, like, really good ways to let the other houses do what they want to do, as well as more board control. So that's kind of a theme throughout each house. I think sometimes when you get a deck that has 19 creature control like this one does, it's like, you know, two or three copies of Gateway to Dis, or, you know, it's kind of all of the creature controls in one house. So it's like you're calling that house just to do one thing, where with this deck, there is really good creature control in every single house. So it's nice because your opponent will never just like rush up by like having a massive board, especially with the Harbinger of Doom. Like, even if you don't get Obsidian Forge out early, there's Gleeful Mayhem that can kill your Harbinger of Doom. There is also a Gleeful Mayhem could also kill that Harbinger, which is pretty nice. Oh, Edoram was the one that I was thinking of. Where if that's already out, you can, of course, play Harbinger, Reap with Edoram to kill the Harbinger, and then board clear your opponent's side of the board if there were more disc creatures than any other creatures. So just a lot of, like, very cheeky ways to kind of make that work that you really have to be conscious of if you're playing against this deck.
So. Yep. So there you go. That's the content of Bayou Overlord. So Jim, you know, it's an 84 SAS. It's bounced around 84 to 86. How competitive do you think this deck really is?
So we've played it in some pretty big tournaments. I think this is actually our Archon solo deck for Shadow Worlds about a year ago, as well as, I mean, pretty much every league we're in, it at least pop up once as far as just like a deck that we try to run. And it is actually very competitive, which is pretty fun. I think a lot of times it can play to what the opponent's trying to do, where it does have some different like strategies of, do you play the longer game and just build up this huge Saurian archive while just keeping their board clear the whole game? Or do you really just try to like rush based off of like, you know, getting Abrakas out, protecting it, and then just like keep on forging every turn because you're getting Amber on your creatures and reaping. It has a lot of flexibility for what it can do to win the game. So I think at first glance, it just seems like, oh, you have to play a slower game, build up the archives, and then win that way. But it just, I mean, with 16 printed Amber, so much creature control, it's very competitive, even with the 4.8 Amber control. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I think it's very competitive. I would feel very comfortable taking this to an Archon solo event. I do think that some of the best players in the world can look at this deck list and can pick up on some of those synergies and combos fairly easily and be able to respond to them. So I don't know that it could win a top level. I mean, I've played games with this too, where like Key Charge and Brockus are the bottom two cards, and you just have those games where you're like, you're working hard, you're trying to do the things, but like if you just never see those cards, that can be an issue. So not to say you can't win without them. Obviously you can. I don't know. I think probably it can high roll somebody. And if they don't know what's coming, or if they're a deck that really depends on board state to pull off stuff. So like, I feel like anytime playing like Star Alliance type decks that just want the Kirby's and the Medic Ingrams and the all, you know, just like, yeah, protect their guys with taunt. It's like, yeah, whatever. I'm just gonna kill it all anyways because it has they're low health creatures, so the Phalanx Strikes are really easy to kill and. But decks that have, I won't get into that. That's the next question. I think this is competitive. I would be happy to take this to a, some kind of Archon event and see what happens. I do think playing this in competitive, there have been several moments where I've just like tilted and been like, I'm so frustrated at this deck for not doing what I need it to do, but it may be a lot more piloting error. I'm a guy. I was talking to somebody the other day. I was playing in a league, And they were talking about how they made a commitment to, like, basically play. I think at one time they said they were going to play every deck 30 times before moving on to another one. And then eventually they got more decks, so they're like, okay, I'm going to lower it to 10. And I'm like, even 10, I'm like, if I get three games with each deck, I'm like, oh, good job. Like, I got three games with the new decks because I get bored so easily. So I think I could probably, if I committed and grinded out 50 games with this, I mean, I've probably played, realistically, I've probably played 25 to 30 games with this deck. If I said, hey, over the next month, I'm going to play 50 games, I think I could get to the point where, like, I'm so comfortable that, you know, I could take it to a vault tour. But I do think it would take a lot of reps.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's easy to, like you were saying earlier, where it's fun that it has so many multiple copies of cards, similar to, like, you know, building your own deck. You want consistency. Like, there's the core pieces of what this deck is trying to do, and those multiple copies of the cards in this deck is why it works so well. But just like you said, yeah, opponents can read into it and pick up on that and kind of plot their strategy around it, because now they're playing around 20 different individual cards rather than 36 kind of idea. But too, I think because this deck can just rush up sometimes and win games, or, you know, sometimes you do just have a giant board and maybe you don't have the Saurian package. It definitely has a best case scenario high roll of starting out with the Eddies, exhuming that, and winning on turn 7 with a sweet, sweet Brockus key charge. But yeah, even if you don't get those, it definitely has legs to stand on to, you know, make it a very competitive game, even without the, like, the real spice, and, you know, really stay in there. So I think that's the telltale sign of, like, a deck that has potential to, like, do well in a tournament, is even when you don't draw well, it can still win a game.
Yeah. So what are like some serious counters? Like, what beats this deck?
Yeah. So I think, I asked the question earlier. I think I wasn't on the podcast as we were talking about this deck, as far as, like, you know, if you could change a card, what would it be? The biggest glaring thing that I see with this deck is it just doesn't have artifact control. You know, if somebody has an Eaton's Jar and they call Phalanx Shard or Key Chart, you know, that would just be crippling. A deck with the Infernuses that can get rid of a lot of your cool combo pieces, especially like the Eddies that you're trying to exhume back. That's always tough. I think it's a lot of the heavy hitter cards that, like, I think when you're looking for competitive decks, like, those are the cards that get you excited. Like, they can punish this deck pretty severely. So trying to navigate how to play around those as best as possible when you come up against them is definitely tricky. Eaton's Jar in particular is one that is just, like, back-breaking.
I think every time I've played against the Eaton's Jar deck with this, they've hit Fouling Strike.
I've had Eddie quite a few times against me with it. Which is always interesting. But I was thinking about, like, man, if I could just change one card in here to still keep the same identity but just make it infinitely better, I think I would probably change the Festering Touch to, like, a Poltergeist.
Which
Poltergeist is a dis action that gives an amber as well. It says play, use an artifact controlled by any players if it was yours, and then destroy that artifact. So it just gives that really just hard artifact removal a little bit more flexibility. And where Festering Touch is definitely the weakest creature control in this deck, that's the one that I think...
That could be a cheeky way of hitting your Obsidian Forge on the same turn, too.
What's that, for the Festering Touch?
No, if you had a Poltergeist on your own Obsidian Forge.
Oh, well, why wouldn't you just use your own Obsidian Forge, though?
Well, if you just played it, if it was exhausted.
Well, I don't think it readies it, so you couldn't use it if it was
exhausted. So it would just destroy it. That makes sense, actually. Yeah. You're right.
So I thought you were talking about Festering Touch can help with Obsidian Forge, because it actually has before.
Yeah.
Where we like to ward all of our Saurian creatures. Sometimes it's like, oh, well, I want Obsidian Forge to win the game, but all of these creatures can't die.
Oh, yeah.
Festering Touch can pop those wards.
That is a problem. That is a problem. I forgot about that.
That's where Festering Touch does shine quite a bit, as far as, like, okay, it can pull that off if you need the Obsidian Forge win. But that is, like, the last, like, hope type thing. Like, Obsidian Forge almost never wins with this deck, but, like, if you just really need it, it can sometimes pull it off.
Yeah, that's interesting. When I was thinking about that question of like, what would I replace? I think that's probably correct, because like a Quixel Stone deck would probably just like ruin this deck. I don't know. Like a good Quixel Stone, I think, would be pretty gross. Although I guess you could do some weird Phalanx Strike stuff, just exalting Brockus and trying to stay alive. But I was thinking, like, the Amber control is pretty low, so you could drop, like, Binding Irons for an Evil Eye. Just to get, because sometimes with this deck, it's like, okay, I just need one more turn to draw into all my, you know, to my Thero Centurion, so I can drop those guys, capture some Amber. You know, like, sometimes I feel like when I lose with this deck, it's like one turn away. So just getting that simple delay, like an Evil Eye, to make their keys cost plus three could be fine. But yeah, like you said, I do think the Infernaces, the purge effects are pretty nasty. I don't enjoy watching my Brachus or Key Charge get or even Eddie's get purged. So, but I mean, that's any deck either way. So
yeah, and of course you could say like, oh, I wish like Spider was an Infernus, but like I don't think that would be a crucial part of like what this deck is trying to do. And I think just like you said, like maybe a little bit more Amber control in Dis, because I don't think there is any Amber control in Dis outside of Malisun.
Yeah.
Which is like even barely creature control.
Yeah, even if like Malisun or one of those guys was a Lilithal where you can fight Reap, capture one, would be interesting just to have like the Brachus the capture, like, use their Amber against them kind of a thing. But nothing like Bat Breaking. I don't think it would change it that much.
Yep, totally agree. So, yeah, it is funny. It's kind of – sometimes you draw this deck totally out of order. You get all the Exhumes early or, like, three Phalanx Strikes but no creatures on board. So that does happen for sure. The Phalanx Strike one has happened to me several times where I'll have two or three of them in hand and – genuinely no creatures or maybe just like one creature on my side of the board. So even just playing them for Amber sometimes is good just to keep cycling. This deck typically will get through once, since a lot of its speed is bringing stuff back from the discard pile. It's almost like making your deck bigger in that way. So normally it's like one playthrough. Sometimes you get through like 1.5 to 2, but almost never more than like 2 full cycles through this deck. So sometimes it's just better to play out the Amber and keep on trucking along. So,
love it. Well, man, we were wondering like, how long can we actually talk about this deck? The answer is very long. So, obviously this was like a little bit different of a podcast topic, but hopefully you enjoyed it. And, if you're curious, man, load this deck up on TCO, give it a whirl. Like I said, I love people saying they pops up in their like sealed matches with Worlds Collide and they just drool over it. It's pretty great. Let's go ahead and move on unless you had any final thoughts that you had to get out about the Bayou Overlord.
No, nothing major. I think, just kind of echoing what you were saying, like I think a joy of doing deck reviews is I love hearing other people's thoughts on it. Even as we sit and talk about this deck in particular, it's funny to see like how we would just play different lines or think differently about it. I'm always curious about other people who give it a shot and want to test out like how strong it is or maybe some like counters that they found or run into. Like, I think having like specific decks like that lots of people can talk about is just like a cool thing. So yeah, if you do end up playing it, reach out. I think that's awesome. Like, love talking about this type of stuff.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Jim. I'm calling an audible on the show notes because we're gonna jump right into King Potato.
Whoa.
That's right.
I wasn't ready.
Well, you're never ready because you've never gotten it right. So let's.
It's true.
if you have not ever heard this podcast, if you stumbled into it, we have a little segment we call King Potato based on Richard Garfield's comment that he loves the deck naming algorithm because it creates names like King Potato. And so we have a little game we like to play where one of us gives the other person the name of a deck, and that person has to guess the houses in that deck based on the name, because they supposedly go off the houses. I don't know. So Jim, are you ready for yours tonight?
Okay, here's the deal. I've tried this several times now, and several times I have failed to get it right. But what you don't know is that I have been practicing meticulously for weeks now as far as any of these casual games that I'm playing that you think it's not competitive anyway. The first thing I do is I look at that deck title and I try to guess its houses. And I would like to say that after several weeks of training, it hasn't helped a bit, but
you're still terrible. It's been fun.
Still awful at it.
Okay.
But you know, it could happen. That's one right. of these days.
Yeah, totally. 100%.
Let's do it.
All right.
Let's dive in.
We're throwing it back to Coda days. Okay.
Whoa.
That's right. Throwing a Coda deck at you. The deck name is The Man That Boxes Harmony.
Ooh.
The Man That Boxes Harmony.
Interesting, interesting. So The Man That Boxes Harmony. So the first thing I'm thinking is like beatboxes, because you can't. Well, he could be physically boxing like someone named Harmony. That would be interesting. But I'm also thinking more of like a beatboxer.
it's interesting that your brain immediately goes to beatboxing, but.
Of course, yeah. You bring up some music in there, so I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at with it. So anyway, yeah. For everybody else playing along, also feel free to guess these. We use science and facts and logic to figure this out. There's no guesswork involved whatsoever. So we do know it's Coda. Do we know if it's first print or second print?
No.
Okay. I didn't expect you to. It's all good.
Yeah. You're so needy sometimes.
No. So The Man That Boxes Harmony. So back to Coda. So the houses that are included in that set, let me pull them up real quick. We have Brobnar, Dis, Logos, Bar, Sanctum, Shadows, and Untamed. So I think where I make the mistake is I listen to the name and just immediately try to like guess the three that make the most sense. I think I want to do like a little pick and choose action this round of like, okay, clearly it can't be these. Maybe this one's for sure. And then we'll narrow it down from there.
Oh my gosh. So, that's the longest king potato ever.
Okay. Man That Boxes Harmony. Number one, if he's boxing Harmony, he is clearly in disguise. So I think this is actually a Martian trying to be like a person, but not really understanding like all of our social cues and norms. So even though I think the man would make me think like Sanctum, I'm going to go with Mars.
Okay.
Boxes. I am thinking, man, Brobnar makes so much sense here. But I just don't think it could be Brobnar. Nope, we're going Brobnar. It's all good. And then for the boxes, Harmony. I just for some reason I'm picturing like if it is beatboxing, a lot of like little like thieves like hanging out, like having a little dance party before they go steal all of the amber. So my final guess is Brobnar, Mars, Shadows, locking it in, final answer.
Okay, so yeah, the fact that you almost didn't say Brobnar, I was about to reach across the internet and slap you because this is so clearly Brobnar, and it is Brobnar. So,
but
so Brobnar is yes part of this deck, and that is all you got right because the other two houses are Sanctum and Untamed.
Unbelievable! This is. It was actually a knight, not a Martian pretending to be a knight.
No, I tried to pick one that was like, to me, I was like, this is, you could at least get two of the three right. Because to me, it's okay, like the harmony part, you could either harmonia. Go like either Harmonia in Untamed, the whole like peace, you know, keeping the peace and whatever, or like keeping the peace like knights do in Sanctum. Like, you know, they keep the peace, the harmony, you know? So Sanctum and Untamed, like either one of those, like he'll at least get two out of three. But alas, he failed. So,
oh, thought I had that one. Yeah, if you really break that one down, like, humans come in Sanctum the most, so that would be the man. Boxes, of course, Bravnar punching things. And then Harmony, like, just taking a Harmonia approach to it. It's, like, three very apparent, like, these houses, like, red flag. I just always assume that, like, you're not having my best interest at heart when it comes to these games. In life, yes, but in these games, no.
No, that's fair. That is 100% correct.
Man, you like double.
So good. Another podcast, another opportunity failed, guys. Will we ever see, before Keyforge gets canceled as a game, will we ever see Jim actually accurately guess the King Potato?
We can't stop podcasting until I guess it right.
It just literally becomes a King Potato podcast every week. All right, we need to sign out of here. Hey, if you haven't, check out our YouTube channel. We got game footage on there. This week I posted 5 games. So if you like watching games like I do with my morning coffee, hop on there. Would love for you to check that out. And then Jim, you got something in the works?
Yeah, for sure. So also going to be trying to get on some game footage as schedule's starting to free up a little bit more. And then 2, I was going to start up a new segment I would like to call Into the Wormhole. So this is going to be on YouTube exclusive, so feel free to check us out on there. And the idea behind it is it's going to be like a mini series where we just kind of do some deep dives into some of the like major cards or combos in Keyforge that new players who are like trying to start playing competitively should know about. So the first one I was going to do was just of the card Too Much to Protect, just to kind of give you guys a quick example. And so the idea of the series is going to be for that episode, do a kind of rundown of all of the ways that like Too Much to Protect can just like break the game, or ways that you can play around it. Just some ideas around that particular card. There might be some combos in the future like Genka or Binite Rupture, Interdimensional Graft, things like that. So if there's combos that you'd like some like information on, or like would like to see like a video to like pass off to friends, send that my way. But yeah, that was just kind of a series that I'd thought about, and gonna try to get the ball rolling on that.
Love it. Love it. So. Love it. Love it. All right. Well, that'll do it for us. Make sure you don't listen to Call of Discovery as you continue your Keyforge endeavors. Be sure to avoid them at all costs, and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.